HPP annual cooperative agreement non-competing continuation guidance. That's really a mouthful. Apologies for the challenges that you may have encountered regarding getting into the Zoom meeting with the password, but hopefully that has been resolved. As Zoe has stated, you know, this call is being recorded. So for anyone that may be unable to attend, then we will certainly be sharing the recording link as well as the transcript following the call. So next slide, please. Okay, this is our agenda slide. So during today's call, I'll be providing you with an overview of the continuation guidance application instructions as well. Also, please free, I'll get it out in just a second, folks, sorry. Please feel free to ask questions in the chat box throughout the presentation on specific sections that we are covering. And we will also have some time at the end of the webinar for you to ask additional questions verbally or through the chat. Next slide, please. So before we get started with the content for today's webinar, I would like you to quickly take the poll on whether you are receiving our weekly ASPR Healthcare Readiness Bulletin. As many of you may know, we did transition to a new platform in February timeframe, but it's come to my attention that some of our subscribers have not received the bulletin in recent weeks. And as you may know, through this bulletin, we share information on upcoming deadlines and meetings and other cooperative agreement information, such as the announcement of this non-competing continuation application. So please complete the poll on your screen. And if you are joining by telephone or unable to complete the poll and you have not received the bulletin since February, please send an email to hpp@hhs.gov and a member of our team will reach out to troubleshoot. We'll now close the poll link and thank you for participating. For those who wish to receive the bulletin but haven't received the distribution since February, we will be in touch to troubleshoot your subscription. So thank you. So we're already on the next slide. Sorry about that. So I'm going to start by providing a brief overview of the continuation application packet and submission information. Next slide, please. Next slide. Okay, as many of you know, only recipients previously awarded under the FY 2019-2023 HPP Cooperative Agreement are eligible to apply for the continuation of funds. The continuation of funds is for fiscal year 2021 budget period 3, which begins on July 1 of this year and ends June 30 of 2022. Applications must be submitted via grantsolutions.gov by 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on June 12, 2021. What's not on this as well, as you know, is that you also need to complete the performs application module by June 12, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time as well. And because you'll be downloading some of those components from the performs application module for your grant solutions application. Next slide, please. So this is just the checklist of required application packet contents, which is also included in outline within the continuation application that all recipients must submit. These documents that are shown here through the grantsolutions.gov. Additionally, there are optional attachments as well if they apply. For those recipients that use a bona fide agent, they need to include documentation. If you are requesting recipient level direct cost above the 18%, you must submit the a waiver request, and you should also submit support letters from healthcare. If anyone is requesting the isolated hospital classification, please submit that request with the application. And then for recipients and healthcare coalitions, if they will be purchasing any PPE, pharmaceuticals, or any other type of medical material, then you must complete and submit the inventory management program protocol with the application. Next slide, please. And next slide. So this is just the list of requirements that were outlined within the application instructions. As a point of reference, requirements may be found in the FY 2019 through 2023 funding opportunity announcement, as well as any requirements that were added or clarified in the FY 2020 budget period 2 continuation application instructions, and then also any clarifications that we have provided here within the budget period 3 application instructions. I won't go into detail on every single one of these, but what you will note is that for ease of use, what we did was we did include those requirements that were clarified from budget period 2 and those elements of or components that may have come out of the Pandemic and All Hazards and Advancing Innovation Act. We included those within these application instructions so that hopefully you would be able to find those very easily and wouldn't have to turn back to or refer back to too many different documents. So the Appendix A is, of course, primarily for the majority of the recipients, except for those recipients that fall into the category of those isolated hospitals, as well as some of our select territories and our freely associated states where their requirements are outlined within the appendix C. Just to kind of touch on a couple of things that you may have noted within the requirements, there were a couple of additional components or some fine tuning based upon our experience with the COVID-19 pandemic response that we implemented, maybe some tweaks to some requirements. You know, one of those was related to the clinical advisor and readiness and response coordinator staffing requirements. You'll note that we did an integration of the medical operations coordination cell, which was a product or an initiative that was developed at the height of the pandemic response. Also some fine tuning for the clinical advisor to be able to assist with advising related to crisis standards of care. Was included as well. For healthcare coalitions to coordinate with regional disaster health response system entity, that is still left very relatively broadly. However, the expectation is that healthcare coalitions that fall within the jurisdiction or where there is a regional disaster health response system demonstration site to coordinate with that RDHRS demonstration site. As you may know, we did award a new demonstration site last year in Denver to the Denver Hospital and Health Authority. Sorry, just looking through these very, very quickly as well. As you already know, regarding the coalition level annexes, for budget period 2 and budget period 3, healthcare coalitions have the option of completing either the burn surge or the infectious disease specialty annex. Whichever one was completed in 2020 or whether with FY 2020 or budget period 2, then you must complete the remaining specialty annex in budget period three. There is a requirement regarding the submitting the new or updated crisis standards of care concept of operations. As you may know, the previous deadline for that was last year for the end of FY 2020 or budget period two. And due to some updates that we've made, and you will see this on a forthcoming slide, due to some of the updates we made to that, we have extended the deadline for the crisis standards of care CONOP to FY 22 in budget period four. And I won't go into details on these remaining ones because I don't want to read to you guys. So next slide, please. We did include, as I alluded to earlier, the modifications to Appendix C for territories, freely associated states, and isolated frontier hospitals. Majority of those are also consistent with some of the changes or the clarifications that were implemented within the Appendix A. But specifically want to point out about the MITIP being waived, also the same modification regarding the crisis standards of care CONOPS was included there, as well as the option to do either the burn surge or the infectious disease surge annex in this budget period. Next slide, please. So want to spend a little time with specific modifications to the crisis standards of care CONOPS requirement. The majority of the bullets here are exactly the same as the previous requirement, with the addition of two bullets at the very bottom. One is that it should include actions the state will take to comply with federal non-discrimination laws. Really, the impetus for highlighting or emphasizing this particular elements to be included in the crisis standards of care plan was during the COVID-19 response. There were some disability, some groups that represented one of the protected groups under the federal non-discrimination laws that had some concerns or filed a complaint with the Office for Civil Rights regarding the crisis standards of care plan. With consideration that maybe potentially individuals that may be discriminated against because of disabilities or age. So we wanted to feature this more prominently. We know that we have an overarching requirement within the funding opportunity announcement for all recipients of federal funding that they must adhere to the federal non-discrimination laws. I thought it was important as well to include that here. So that no complaints will be filed against anyone, but also at the same time to just make sure that no one is being discriminated against because on the basis of race, color, national origin, disability, age, and in some cases, sex and religion. So we want to make sure that the crisis standards of care plan, or CONOPS rather, are inclusive. Also, another requirement another element that was included was for the actions the state will take to engage the community and clinicians. And we wanted to put just a little bit more of a finer point on that specific requirement to encourage community engagement as well as engagement of clinicians. This also was somewhat of an outcome in what we've been learning from the pandemic response. And I've already stated about the change to the deadline for the CONOPS. I know there's a number of recipients that may have completed their CONOPS. So if you would just, you know, please go back and take a look at those to make sure that those latter two elements are included within your crisis answer care CONOPS, but we did extend the deadline for another year for FY to FY 22 with at the end of FY 21. Apologies. And so with the change in that deadline, then the kind of the trickle down effect is that the deadline for the CSC CONOPS plan incorporation and validation in an HCC level exercise has now been extended to FY 2022, our budget period four. Next slide, please. On this slide, and then on the subsequent slide, this is just really highlighting the specific requirements that were in the funding opportunity announcement for budget period three. And those are for completing the public information officer training, developing the ability to rapidly alert and notify employees, patients, and visitors to facilitate communication, developing an HCC continuity of operation, and to develop an healthcare coalition continuity operations plan. So those are what are detailed here on these slides, this slide and the subsequent slides, and these were pulled directly from the funding opportunity announcement. Next slide, please. Next slide. Okay. This requirement here is a little bit out of order from those that we just displayed regarding the budget period three requirements. And wanted to highlight this one because it is associated also with the crisis standards of care requirement. There is a requirement that a budget period three requirement that each funded healthcare coalition must collaborate with the recipient to integrate the following crisis care elements into their response plan. And that requirement was a BP3 requirement. That too will now be extended. The deadline for that will now be extended as well to FY 2022 or budget period four. So just wanted to make sure that this was included in the slides so that you have it as a reference when you receive these slides and need to refer back to it. And then also for anyone that maybe it may have been unable to participate today and was looking back at the slides and listening to the playback. Next slide, please. And this is just a list of the benchmarks and the pandemic influenza planning requirements, which are our withholding requirements. You may have noticed within the application instructions that we made some modifications or some clarifications or implemented some flexibilities regarding the benchmarks. So the benchmarks have not changed, but just want to highlight those that may have had changes or may have been waived. So the Joint Multi-Year Training and Exercise Plan, or the MITEP, is waived for this year. You're already aware of the Healthcare Coalition Burn Surge or Infectious Disease Preparedness and Surge Annex requirement that you must complete one or the other this year. If you completed the Infectious Disease Annex template last year, then the Burn Surge Annex is the requirement for this year and vice versa. Also for benchmark number seven, which is the requirement related to the Healthcare Coalition annual work plan and training plan, the training plan is waived. The requirement to submit the Healthcare Coalition annual work plan is not waived. You must still submit that. The benchmark number eight, related to essential elements of information template in completing that, that is still suspended until further notice. There are still discussions among the various federal agencies as well as the White House regarding the collection of EEI. So we are suspending that again until further notice. As you may know, in FY 2019 and in FY 2020, those were for the budget period one and budget period two, we had waived the annual healthcare coalition surge test as well as the hospital surge test due to the COVID-19 response. The coalition surge test and the hospital surge test will be required for budget period three, but also want to let you know that we are in the process along with the evaluation group with revisiting both of those tools to make updates to those tools so that they can be a little bit more flexible. We know that early on within the pandemic response, we heard very loud and clear that the concern with these tools was that the scenario being around evacuation and the inability to be able to make those applicable to different scenarios. So we are revisiting the coalition surge test tool as well as the hospital surge test tool, and updated tools will be forthcoming for budget period three. Regarding the pandemic influenza planning requirement, ASPR does not require recipients to submit a pandemic flu plan. We allow our recipients to be able to meet that requirement basically by responding to our performance measures. And then we take those performance measures and identify those that we think would be most applicable to pan flu planning. So there is no separate submission requirement or a requirement to submit a pandemic influenza plan to ASPR to meet that requirement. Next slide, please. So in this kind of next segment or section, just want to explain our approach related to the FY 2021 budget period through budget period three funding formula, as well as the award amount. This is just a very quick snapshot of explaining our funding formula design. As you know, our funding amounts are determined by a statutorily required funding formula. Also, the FY 2021 award amounts for each recipient are identical to FY 2020 levels. So it wasn't your imagination when you looked at the funding table, and we didn't make a mistake when you looked at the funding table. If you noticed that the funding level of or your award amount was exactly the same as last fiscal year. As you may know, we had modifiers, what we call a discretionary modifier was added to our funding formula so that it could focus on healthcare surge specific risk and weight particular event types. And one of the modifiers was a discretionary modifier as a part of our funding formula. So if a recipient jurisdiction experiences a public health emergency in any fiscal year, the HPP discretionary modifier ensures that the recipient will not experience an HPP funding decrease for the following fiscal year. So due to COVID-19 public health emergency, no recipient will have a decrease in funding for FY 2021 compared to FY 2020. So thus, we applied the discretionary modifier for all recipients for COVID-19. Therefore, you did not see a decrease in the funding, in your funding award amount for FY 2021. Next slide. Okay, so those kind of conclude kind of the prepared slides. And so with that, we'll move or open the line up for any application instructions that you may have.
Thanks, Jennifer. As a reminder, everyone can submit a written question in the chat box or ask a question verbally. If you would like to ask a question verbally, please select the raise hand icon in the participants bar and we will unmute you so you can ask your question. I do see one question in the chat, which reads, this week's HPP bulletin discusses carryover and says the HPP COVID-19 supplement can also be carried forward by request. Since the supplement was awarded in BP1, can you explain how the process works? Are we moving the unobligated COVID funds from BP1 into BP3?
Great question. So, and hopefully I won't confuse this too much. So the COVID supplemental funds, or rather the appropriation for the COVID-19 supplemental funds, it was a 5-year appropriation. However, because the funding was added to an existing award, then the period of performance for the COVID supplemental funding had to mirror or had to be identical to the performance period or the budget period for the existing main award, and in this case, the annual HPP cooperative agreement. So initially, the COVID supplemental funding expired along with the budget period one, which was June 30, 2020. And then the recipient should have requested a carryover request to be able to use those unobligated funds from the COVID supplemental in budget period three, and then would have to submit another carryover request in order to carry over those funds into the budget period three. And I see that that Virginia Simmons is on. So Virginia, if you want to clarify that further, or if I didn't answer that correctly, please unmute yourself.
Hello? Jennifer, can you hear
me? We can hear you.
Hi. Yes, you did a wonderful job of explaining the carryover process. Absolutely. So, correct. The funds, those COVID funds, are now expired with the budget period two award. So once you receive your budget period three award, you can then submit a request to carry over the budget period two funds, COVID funds, into your budget period three award. And if you have any questions, if any of you have questions, detailed questions about the carryover process, if we did not explain anything clearly, you feel free to reach out to your assigned grants management specialist for clarification. But again, just to be specific, submit your carryover request for carryover of unobligated COVID funds for budget period two after you receive your budget period three award. Now, some people may want to submit the budget period, the COVID funding, the carryover request with their budget period three application. You may do that as well, but we strongly recommend you submit it after you receive your award. But either way, the specialists are available to assist you. The grants management specialist can assist you directly if you need further clarification or your particular circumstances are different or requires more information. I hope that's helpful. And again, Jennifer, yes, you did a good job explaining it. Well said.
Thank you, Virginia. And I would note that Virginia is on the line to respond to any specific grants management questions as well. So for those of you that may be new to HPP, Virginia Simmons is the Chief Grants Management Officer for ASPR Grants Management. Thank you, Virginia.
Thanks, Jennifer and Virginia. We do have a few more questions. The next one reads, do we submit the request to carry over COVID funds after July 1st, 2021?
And I believe that Virginia answered that question. She said that they can be submitted after July 1, 2021, after the start of the budget period three, but also that the carryover request can be submitted with the application.
Excellent. And we do have another question that reads, a note was added to Grant Solutions stating that effective immediately, the reporting requirement has been updated to increase from $25,000 to $30,000. The question is, how does this impact funding for this award?
This is Virginia again. So we submitted that information because we wanted all the recipients to know about the change in the requirement. It does not impact your funding at all. It is a notification to change to your to the grant administrative requirements. When we process your BP3 awards, we will update the terms and conditions with that that requirement. We are required to change your terms and conditions of award when grant and cooperative agreement, federal grant and cooperative agreement requirements, regulatory requirements are updated. So that is an update to your reporting requirement for your grant. It does not impact your award.
Thank you, Virginia. We do have a question asking to clarify obligated versus unobligated.
Sure. So anytime a recipient receives an award, and let's just take this particular program in effect as an example. So with this program, you have, it's a 5-year period of performance, and each year is, you have a budget period with increments of, with a 12-month increment, okay? So you're given an award every 12 months. So that 12-month budget period reflects your budget period 1, budget period 2, which you're in right now, and you're about to receive a budget period 3 award. You are required by federal regulations to obligate, meaning expend your funding for that particular award within that 12-month period of that respective budget period. And what that means is an example, allocated to an invoice for service or product. And so if you are required to do so within that 12-month period. If you have not obligated or expended those federal funds within that 12-month period, let's say you have some of that award left over, it has not been expended, meaning you have not invoiced it, you have not allocated it for a service or product with a vendor or what have you, then it is considered unobligated. However, that 12-month period expires, and yet you have those unexpended or unobligated funds sitting there. So this is where you get into the carryover request. Should you need to obligate those funds within the next budget period, and you are required to request prior approval via a carryover request in order to expend, access, or allocate those unobligated funds for that expired budget period for the next budget period. Or in some cases, for some of you, you may decide, oh, I don't need it this upcoming budget period. You may later find that you need it in another budget period, say budget period 4. There was a question earlier about carrying over funds, unobligated funds, for budget period 1 into budget period 3. So apparently that recipient didn't need the expired, unexpended funds for budget period 1 in the subsequent budget period year, budget period 2. But they now find that they're going to need to utilize those unexpended funds that they were awarded in budget period 1 in budget period 3. So, as I stated before, you would submit a carryover request for prior approval to expend or access or allocate those unexpended funds for the previous award, which in that situation, which was awarded in budget period 1, for budget period 3. That requires a detailed budget report of what you intend to expend those funds on. I hope this was clear. And if it's not, again, you have access to your assigned grants management specialist to further clarify the difference between unobligated and obligated. And they can look further into your particular budget in your situation to assist you with expending your funds. Thank you.
Thank you, Virginia, for that clarification. We have a follow-up to that explanation with a scenario in which a contract would be encumbered for PPE using COVID funds and the PPE is on back order. So can there be a carryover for these obligated funds, or is that considered unobligated?
Just to be clear, if the recipient, actually initiated an invoice for a contract, a vendor, for whether it's COVID funds or just regular HPP funds, and that invoice was not paid out. So in that instance, and I truly understand, especially with contracts, it takes time for processing invoices. Then the recipient can ask for a what we would call an extension to liquidate funds. Now, at the end of each budget period, recipients have 90 days from the end of their 12-month budget period to liquidate obligated funds. So they can ask for an extension to liquidate those funds. Absolutely. And again, they would need to contact the grants management specialist for detailed information to process the extended liquidation of those funds. And that is important. That's a very good question. And that is important, especially because it does affect the FFR that is also required, that recipients are also required to submit 90 days after the end of the budget period, which is called the annual federal financial report, SF-425. Thank you.
Thank you, Virginia. Another question reads, can we please repeat the updated recipient pandemic influenza plan requirement explanation?
Sure, and I'll try to simplify it because I probably stated it in a very convoluted way. There is no specific requirement for recipients to submit a pandemic influenza plan to ASPR. How we meet that requirement, or how we have the recipient to meet that requirement, is by responding to our performance measures. So when you submit or respond to your performance measures at the end of the budget period, then you have been considered that you have then met that pandemic influenza plan requirement. So instead of submitting a plan, you only have to respond to the performance measures. To the HPP performance measures.
Thank you, Jennifer. Could we, I'm seeing a lot of questions about extension versus carryover. Can we go over that one more time?
Sure. Just for clarification, recipients are required to submit their federal financial report 90 days after the end of their budget period. Okay. So the purpose of providing you 90 days to submit your annual federal financial report is to allow you time to liquidate all of your obligations, meaning, just to be clear, that example we used, invoicing for contracts in particular, or vendors in particular, which can take quite some time. You're allotted 90 days to liquidate all expenditures. Another way of saying that, just in case it's not clear, for clarity, is you're allotted 90 days to let's say, expend, make sure that all of your expenditures are accounted for. Your invoicing, your pay for receipt, your receipt for payments, all of those are validated. Your vendors are paid. All of your accounts, your financial accounts, for all of your expenditures of federal funds are accounted for. Because, and why do we allow this? So that you can give an accurate report of what federal funds you expended for that 12-month period. And again, if this isn't clear, I emphasize that you contact your grants management specialist. We're here to assist you with your awards. And it's okay if this is your first time and you're not quite clear in terms of how to ensure that all of your awarded funding is allocated, expended, and obligated. Many of you should have an accountant on staff or a financial person on staff to assist you. That individual is typically the one that is responsible for drawing down the funds and managing your financial management systems. So we do want to hear from you if you have any issues. We want to ensure that you're on track and you have a thorough understanding, because that is a requirement also in terms of your fiduciary responsibility in administering federal funds. So don't hesitate to contact your grants management specialist if you're not clear on your responsibility of at the end of their budget period for allocating or accounting for your obligation or expenditure of federal funds. So again, we're here for you for detailed information and any specific issues to your account. And I hope that's helpful. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Virginia. And for everyone's awareness, Jennifer has pasted the pandemic influenza planning requirement in the chat for your reference. We do have another question. It says that Performs has required upload for the MyTap. Given that it's waived, how should we handle this?
I'll be following up with the CDC Performs team. So the business requirements, or rather the application module, was developed prior to us finalizing the HPP application instructions. So we'll get that reconciled as well.
Thank you, Jennifer. If we have questions regarding Performs, Jennifer, can you explain where those should be directed?
Certainly, those should probably be directed to the CDC Performs team. But what I can state for that particular question that I'm seeing here, will Performs be updated to be able to use browsers other than Internet Explorer? It's my understanding in speaking with the CDC Performs team that they are in the process of doing some internal discussions and testing to be able to use other browsers. So stay tuned for additional information regarding upgrades and the ability to be able to use additional browsers. So I do know an announcement is going to be forthcoming.
Thank you.
just one clarification I wanted to make. I believe that we made an error in the application instructions where there was where it discusses or talks about the deadline for the annual FFR for budget period three. It looks like we inadvertently included information regarding budget period two versus budget period three, and that should be budget period three, which the performance period or the budget period dates are July 1, 2021 through June 30, 2022. So therefore, that annual FFR for budget period three is what is due by September 30 of 2022. Mm-hmm. So just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you, Jennifer. We do have one more question. It says, in previous reauthorizing legislation for this program, unspent from one budget period could only be used in the subsequent budget period and when they expired. Did that change with the last reauthorization?
I think previously that was due to a requirement when we were working jointly with or were aligned and had a joint application with FEP. But it's my understanding that the funds do expire at the end of the budget period. But as Virginia stated, then you must submit a carryover request in order to be able to use those funds. But Virginia, if I could get you to address, I don't believe that the funds expire and have to be returned to Treasury, correct? And Virginia, if you're speaking, you're on mute.
Okay, thank you very much. I didn't realize that. Yeah, absolutely. The official and final expiration, which would be when the funds are returned to Treasury, would be after the period of performance, after the 5 years have passed. So again, each annual budget period, because it's in increments of 12 months, the budget periods are in increments of 12 months, they have an expiration period of 12 months, meaning that they are no longer available to the recipients after that 12-month period. They do still exist, they're still in the account, but the recipients no longer have access after that 12-month period. So recipients must request the prior approval to carry over the funds into the subsequent budget period or a budget period preceding that budget period that where the funds have expired. Absolutely.
Thank you, Jennifer, and thank you, Virginia. And thank you to everyone for all the questions. Please note that any remaining questions can go to your field project officers. And if there are any carryover questions in the chat, we will follow up with an email after this meeting. So Jennifer, over to you.
Great, thank you, Zoe. And thank you everyone for all of the questions. These are great questions and we wanna make sure that we do answer every single question that you have. You can certainly send questions to the HPP mailbox, hpp@hhs.gov. Or as Zoe stated, you also have a ready and prepared and informed group of folks that are available to you in our project officers. So please certainly reach out to them as well. But thanks all. I want to say thanks to all of you for joining us today. If you have additional questions, please feel free to reach out. And then, kind of our last parting statement is, of course, if you know, if you have just this story, please feel free to share those with us, as well as success stories related to your subrecipients, especially as it relates to COVID, to the COVID-19 response. And you can submit that story or those stories either by email at hpp@hhs.gov, or you can fill out our new story from the field submission form, which is available on our Healthcare Readiness in Action Stories from the Field website. And our team has also included a link for that. And if you submit a story, then a member of our communications team will reach out to learn more. So again, thanks everyone for joining. We look forward to continue to hear your questions that you may have. I guess one final parting note. Please don't wait until the last minute to submit your application. If at all possible, please submit your application early, before the deadline date. Work closely with the regional staff in the development of your application, so that, you know, if you have any challenges, that maybe that those can be addressed on the front end, versus after the award is made. So with that, we are going to end today's call. Again, thanks everyone, and have a great day.